Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And my guest today is joining me all the way from Augsburg, Germany. And this is not the first time he's been on my show. This is the second time. So I'm super honored that he hopefully enjoys spending time with me and sharing all the stuff about Lyme and tick-borne illnesses and just the whole Lyme and beyond, right? And not only has he been on my show a couple of times, I had the pleasure of meeting him, oh my gosh, probably about a decade ago. I was running a nonprofit and he flew into my hometown of Chico, California and spoke at a medical conference that I was putting on through the nonprofit. So it's always fun to connect with him and see him, and he's just truly a wealth of information. He is the founder of Armin Labs. So I've got Dr. Armin with me today, and we are just going to dive into all the stuff. So we'll see how much we can cram in here, and we might have to have him back a third time. So super excited for this episode. Dr. Armin, always great to see you. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very, very much, Tanya. It's always a great pleasure seeing you and talking in your Lyme and Beyond show. And I will do my very, very best to give you a lot of information about international development of Lyme and other infections. So I'm so happy being back again.
Oh, well, thank you. It's truly my honor. So yeah, gosh, where are we even going to start? Can we just give the listeners, for any of them that may not be familiar with who you are, just kind of what got you into this and why was it so fascinating and this is where you wanted to take things?
Yes, I'm 60 years old, around that, and my career is coming to an end, let me say so. But meanwhile, I studied pharmacy, biochemistry when I was younger. Then I decided to study medicine. I got a human medicine doctor, did my PhD in endocrinology, which was also very interesting to learn about that. After that, I worked in a hospital with infectious diseases. I never diagnosed Lyme disease, so it was early 90s, so 1991. As you know, Freddie Mercury, he died, I think, 1985 or so, and we learned about HIV infections the first time that we saw that infections were threatening us, but we never diagnosed Lyme disease. Early 90s, we were not educated in Lyme disease and co-infections and other infections that time. Sorry about that, but that was my university education. After that, I decided, going back to laboratory, after my internal medicine time, I went for qualification, which is around 5 years in Germany. I did a lot of work in microbiology, immunology, endocrinology, clinical chemistry, hematology. So I know a lot about how to culture pathogens. And so I learned a lot about the immune system that time. Yeah, and after that, I came to Lyme disease, by surprise. I was not aware of Lyme disease. So we are talking about 2002, 2003. It's now 23 years ago around that. And after that, I decided my mission is not impossible. My mission is possible. And I want to give my heart and my whole energy for Lyme and co-infected patients.
Wow. Well, I, for one, I'm sure I can say it on behalf of all the listeners out there or anybody dealing with Lyme disease, we appreciate you, right? So it sounds like you have this amazing background, this knowledge of our bodies, the just how our bodies work and how to do all this specialty, you know, specimen things and all of that. And so it's just incredible the work that you've done over the years. And I'm excited to talk about, you know, some of the new stuff. And I know that a lot of times we focus on Lyme disease, right? Like that's what we call it. And there's so much more to it than just Lyme. And hence the name of my podcast, Lyme and Beyond, right? We got to go beyond just the Lyme, and beyond even just the co-infections. We are working with so many different things that can attack our body. And so I know that you have dove into all of them. And so I'm just excited to see where we want to go with this. So what do we want to start with? Do we want to start with the testing that you have? First of all, and of course, for all the listeners, they know that in the description of this episode, we will have the links and any information that we mention here, because your armandlabs.com website is fantastic. You've got many great checklists on there. You've got kind of little health tracker journeys on there. So much information that is free for people to go on and check out and print out and see, because first of all, when we go to treat any type of an illness, we need to know what we have, right? And so we can't just throw the kitchen sink at it and hope something sticks. A lot of times I know we want to, but that's probably not the best way to go about it. So the checklists that you have on your website are just incredible. They're a great tool for people to go on, print out, fill them out. And then we have kind of a starting point, right? To know what to even test for. So I love that you do that. And maybe we can just kind of start there.
Yes, this is very interesting, all of these points. I would say congratulations for your title and beyond. So that's very important. Lyme is a starter to me, and the menu is coming later. I will explain why later on. So when I came into this field, I was convinced everybody has Lyme disease, and I'm a clinician and a laboratory doctor, you know, so I know how to interpret test results, how to select them. I was very well educated. I treated patients also with Lyme disease, with other infections. By the way, I was also oncologist for a while. I know how to treat immune or help the immune system, but it's not so easy. I was not so easy that time with the chemotherapies we did. So I was cardiologist for a while. I was nephrologist, so I know about the origin, the gastroenterologist. I come from, as you mentioned already, from clinical symptoms. The symptoms for Lyme disease are not specific for Lyme disease. That's a huge problem. So every Lyme patient has fatigue, but fatigue is not a specific symptom. Most of the Lyme patients have brain fog, short-term memory loss, which could be very typical also for Lyme disease. Some have night sweat, but night sweat is also not specific for Lyme disease. This could be also babesia or hormonal problems or whatever. So the symptoms for Lyme disease, the bullseye rashes are, we don't discuss about that. Bullseye rashes are proving Lyme disease. You don't need a test. If it's a typical bullseye rash, a tick bite, treat Lyme disease. It's easy to do that. You know, treat it long enough. Don't treat it 2 days or 10 days with doxycycline. Treat it so long the bullseye rash is there, and then you do a good thing. The doctors don't know about that. Education is missing for the doctors. So what I can tell you, the Lyme disease is not a clear, we name it a case characterization. And by the way, all of these studies done for Lyme disease, they are completely wrong, because in these studies, if you name it evidence-based or double-blind controlled, you need to respect other infections, because we know nowadays that Lyme is not alone, it's not a single thing. The ticks are dirty needles, and also mosquitoes or horseflies can transmit you Lyme disease and maybe rickettsia. So you have, or cats, it has also to do with your domestics. So Bartonella is one of the tick-borne illnesses, is also in the cats, under the cat's nails. So you need to ask all of your patients for cats or cat's contacts or cat scratches. Also going way back into childhood, because you know, juvenile arthritis was the first cases in Lyme, Connecticut, where Willy Borgdorfer found that this could be an association, could have been associated with a tick bite. And then they found the spirochet in the ticks, and then they treated with antibiotics, and the juvenile diabetes disappeared. So, but still the question is for rheumatologists, what is juvenile diabetes? It could be Lyme disease for sure. So it's not specific with the symptoms, and this needs a very, very good case characterization. So you need 1 hour, as you mentioned, I think 1 hour, you need to ask the patient a lot of questions. By that, the doctors don't have the time for doing that. You know, they are very busy, like me also. We don't have the time, and time is money. So what I thought about that 15 years ago, let's develop, I think it was the time when Boris Kano developed also the Lyme disease questionnaire. I developed parallel co-infections and Lyme disease questionnaire. So because it was pretty clear that the co-infections are with the overlapping symptoms, you know, the symptom also could be co-infection symptom, Bartonella, rickettsia, whatever a symptom. So the symptoms are not specific. And the checklist, as you mentioned, you could download free of any cost from the website. And this is the first step of getting or coming to a diagnosis. It's not a laboratory test, you know. You spare money if you we name it a differential, if you do it by different clinical symptoms in different patients. Not every patient is now suffering from Lyme disease, but they think they have Lyme disease. In the beginning, I was convinced everybody is suffering from Lyme disease. So antibiotics. I was ILETS member. I went to ILETS in 2005, that time, 20 years ago. Since that, I'm ILETS member. I was on the board. I know Horowitz. I know the younger Boris. I know all of them, you know, Ray Strigger and all of the guys. I know I'm now on the ALADF, the Educational Foundation Board, because I want to bring science into it. So, but the question is, what is Lyme disease? What is a Lyme typical symptom in the end?
Wow. Yeah. And that is so important. And I'm glad that you brought up a lot of good points, but a couple of them is, these doctors, you're right, who have an hour to spend with the patients, but you kind of really need that time to know. And so that's why these checklists are great, because a doctor can look over the checklist in 5 minutes versus an hour long conversation. And then that is also streamlining it more so that when you do go to run the labs, we're not spending excess money, right? We all know that it's tough financially to battle this journey. And so we don't want to just be throwing money at just labs, just willy-nilly, right? So the checklists are great. It gives you or any practitioner the knowledge that they need to know so that they can then figure out which lab tests that need to be done.
Yeah, don't be worried about the checklist. Meanwhile, we have a multiple infection checklist, and you will find also on that parasites, yeast, and mold, and a lot of viruses, because we know it's a complexity of different pathogens, different bad bugs in your body making you sick. But we are all of these full of these bad bugs, but we have a lot of good bugs. As an example, we have good bacteria in our gut. We name it the microbiome. We have good viruses in our gut. We name it the microbiome. But what we should not have in our gut would be a parasite or a yeast or mold. We have some of that, but we need to control them. If we have a parasite in our gut, we could eliminate by our immune system, but if our immune system is very weak, we cannot eliminate, and then we are getting sick, we're getting symptomatic, we get a leaky gut, we get histamine intolerances, we get allergies, you know, so that's very, very common. And also around us, we have a lot of dogs and a lot of eggs in the stool from the dogs, and we eat up these eggs without seeing them. So this transmission way, we name it, it's not to see how somebody is coughing at you, somebody is sneezing, somebody is going to the same restroom, sharing the same restroom in the plane. You know, they are dirty places. And so be careful with the hygienic standards everywhere. And also the food could be dirty. It's not just the mycotoxins or the poisons in it. We have a lot of these challenges around us, but we have an immune system, which is very, very important. And when we're getting older, it's getting weaker. We know that. But when we are younger, it's better. Look at the juvenile arthritis. What's happening? In younger years, you have not such a good immune system. You got a tick bite, and after a while, you don't know it's Lyme disease. Maybe you bring Borrelia burgdorferi, which is the pathogen for Lyme disease, under control. So the juvenile diabetes, juvenile arthritis, is disappearing. And by this, you think, everything is fine now. But later on, you get rheumatoid arthritis when your immune system is getting worse. or getting weaker when you're 60 plus or so, or have a lot of stress, or a lot of, you get a lot of corticosteroids into your body, a lot of immune suppression, and then you get a reactivation of this normally immune-controlled Borrelia burgdorferi spirochete in your body, which can do persister forms. We have a fantastic test for that. We can now check everybody for persister forms of Borrelia burgdorferi, the pathogen for Lyme disease, in your body. It's named the TickPlex test. We didn't have that 10 years ago. So the diagnostics are more and more improving in that. But these persister forms can be reactivated. If you have a herpes on your lips and you get Lyme disease and you don't know it's Lyme disease, then this spirochete is suppressing your immune system. You get an inflammation in your body also. And by this pathway, you get a reactivation of a herpes simplex virus on the lips without knowing that you have underlying Lyme disease, or vice versa. You know, hen and egg question. This is very challenging, all of these questions. Therefore, these multiple infection checklists, which came up by long COVID, post-vaccinated patients, we find so many infections in these people, patients you cannot imagine. And then we have options to treat. And my principle, or the principle for the future, in the whole medicine, it's not a theory. Also, FDA is naming it now that way. It's a 2I model, they say. Okay, 2I model means it's the immune suppression. You know, you have the immune dysfunction by something, by stressing factors, whatever. And then, oh, you had corona, and then you have the spike protein cycling around you that also makes a lot of noise in your body, a lot of immune suppression. And by that pathway, you get inflammation in your body. So what is missing in all of these models is still this reactivation of Lyme disease, of Bartonella, of Chlamydia. These are all bacteria. The reactivation of viruses, as it is with the EBV, CMV, Coxsackie, which is a gut virus, you got reactivations by that. Or also you could have a reactivation of parasites or yeast and mold, Candida aspergillus. So we need to respect that Lyme is the beginner of a story, the starter for many patients.
Yeah. And, you know, it is when we talk about Lyme, we talk about all the stuff, right? We talk about parasites and poop and all the not so fun stuff. It's just kind of what goes with it. But yeah, we do live in a scary, dirty world out there. We have to protect, you know, our bodies from not just the toxins that we put in it, the environmental toxins, you know, being around other people that are toxic. And so a lot plays into that. And like you, of course, you have all this amazing, you know, training and experience and all that. I'm just a Lyme patient, but more times than not, whenever I talk to somebody and I hear all these symptoms, that's the first thing that pops into my head. You have Lyme, you have Lyme, you have Lyme, right? And I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing, because it could be something, a place for them to start, right? Because a lot of people don't even know what Lyme is. I know I didn't. And so I'm happy to hear that you say that you're understanding that not everything is just Lyme, right? So it's all different. And then I want to tie into what you mentioned earlier is so many people have been misinformed about Lyme disease, that it has to be a deer tick that bites you, that it has to be latched onto you for so many hours, that you have to get a bullseye rash. There's sadly so much misinformation out there online where people search for, and it's scary, right? Because then if you want to come back and say something, no, that's not what they say. Well, unfortunately, not everything you read on Google is facts, right? Or is perfect. But yes, so much more new information is coming out about any creature that has the capability of biting you can have a dirty needle, as you say, right? And so what type of pathogens are these putting into our bodies, right? Like the mosquitoes or the fleas or, you know, just different things. I'm sure there's probably a whole random case of them.
Yeah, if you come to the idea of Lyme disease, it could be a door opener for you, you know. So, but then you should not do the mistake to go just into antibiotic ways for your whole life, you know. Antibiotics are also anti-inflammatory, but they also suppress your immune system and they destroy the gut. And then you have different problems with other reactivations of viruses we see in the world. So this door opener is there. And what we need is education for the doctors, training courses. We do now one of the European IELTS conference in Lisboa. I'm also one of the educators there for laboratory tests. So we need to educate, and also we need to teach about the symptoms. The symptoms, it's not just Bulsarish, it could be also a summer flu without Bulsarish. So 10% or 20% have a summer flu after tick bite without knowing that it's Lyme disease, and the doctors don't know, as an example. And then you get infected, and then after a while, you're very, very sick. You have headache, you have brain fog, you have memory, short-term memory loss, you have also shoulder pain, you have changing migraine joint pain, you have numbness, you have cold hands, cold fingers. This is also very interesting. All of these infections are doing coagulation problems. We name it microclots. Therefore, we do a lot of apheresis now, also not just in Germany. So we try to clean the blood, you know, because the blood is so dirty, as you mentioned already, the toxins, and it's like you have a kidney insufficiency and you need some purification of your blood to reach purer blood. But this is just a temporary effect, so you improve for a short while. What we know now, these symptoms for Lyme disease are very complicated. You know, it's not so easy. Some questions, what I can tell you, very typical night sweat between 2 and 4 o'clock. So after midnight. What could that be? I discussed with Horowitz, I think 12 years ago, and he said it's Babesia. I said, no, it's Lyme disease. So what? Babesia is malaria-like, or it could be both. You know, we don't know. This is very pathognomonic for this illness, for Lyme disease. This night sweating like hell in the beginning, but not everybody has every symptom. This depends on the subspecies, as you mentioned, for Borrelia, Garinii, Aftselia, Sensostricto, Bavariensis, Lusitania, whatever. You have so many different, not all are making you sick, and the ticks can be full of different subspecies and you don't get sick. So no panicking about that. We do a lot of tick tests nowadays. So if you have a tick bite, keep it and test it for Borrelia, test it for Rickettsia, Bartonella, Ehrlichia, Anaplasma, and Babesia. And then you know what is inside the tick. The tick is it's a vector-borne illness. Okay, if you have a mosquito bite, you cannot collect the mosquito. It's difficult to collect it and to send it into a laboratory for a mosquito test. But these are the, we name it the vector-borne illnesses in the world, you know. So this is a challenge, the symptoms. And what is our problem in the world nowadays? Or not nowadays, it's since I started, you got attacked, you're under control, you need to be under the radar. A good friend of mine is Dieter Klinghardt. As you know, his history is also, he needs protection sometimes. So we are really attacked. But now we have a little hope with Kennedy in America that also he's caring for Lyme disease more politically. It's a political thing, you know. In the end, the question is, does chronic Lyme exist or not? Could it be reactivated or not? These are the key questions. But this is the question for all of these infections I mentioned. That's the same question for Bartonella. The universities, if you ask an expert in America, or CDC or FDA control, they say, no, it doesn't exist. The patient is simulating symptoms. So, but how can you simulate all of these symptoms? I think it's really difficult. We need a very good education of the doctors and also for all of these infections. And still, we have this checklist. It's some kind of artificial intelligence, because in this checklist, all of the main common symptoms from the teaching books are programmed. And then patients fill it out within 5 minutes or so. And then you know, do I have a suspicion for Bartonella or for Borrelia or for a parasite or for a virus, for EBV, CMV, herpes, varicella, whatever, gut virus, Yersinia, Campylobacter in the gut play also very, very important role. Is gut bacteria or yeast and mold. And then you get the first impression and then you can test. And then I swear you find the answer. Not for all of these infections where I say, oh, you could have a chlamydia pneumonia infection because you have a little cough. Oh, Lyme disease is not doing so, this cough. air hunger. Yeah, air hunger is not a specific symptom. This could be also mycoplasma or it could be babesia or whatever. But you cannot put all of the symptoms under one roof of one infection. We need to differentiate, and then we know what to treat, and then we need to treat adequately, and then we don't have so many discussions with CDC or FDA.
Yes, and that's a big thing. And I am going to do a shout out to you know, our changes in America that are happening with this newest term going on. And I, for one, am super excited and super grateful. Unfortunately, RFK Jr. dealt with Lyme, his children dealt with Lyme. And so I think that that's kind of a bonus for us that are dealing with this, because he understands it's a real thing and that it is a problem. And yeah, we have to protect the doctors, right? Because so many of them are getting in trouble. And so again, it's always my appreciation to those doctors that put, you know, their all the years of studies on the line to help, you know, take care of us patients, because so many of them don't. And I get it. It's kind of this, you know, devil angel thing going on.
maybe one sentence to that to be added. I think it's very important. This is not to say you are guilty for that, but the students are not educated in Lyme disease and in chronic or in the infections. You know, they are not very well educated. It's a part of your study. And the question is how much information, but the students are not teached about chronic infections. And now what's happening? The students are going into, let me say, cardiologists. The cardiologists, they are not focused on infections. The internal medicine or the cardiologists, or no, let name it better, the neurologists. You develop a you go to neurologists. I worked in neurology with spinal taps and so. And they do a spinal tap. They check at your spinal tap and do a puncture. And then you say in your spinal fluid, there are no Borrelia antibodies, so I exclude Lyme disease, neuroborreliosis. But you cannot exclude that. You have multiple sclerosis, you have Parkinson's, you do this puncture, and you don't accept a chronic diagnosis. You believe that chronic Lyme doesn't exist. Because why? It's in the guidelines. And the guidelines are our problem. We have not so good guidelines for the patients of the neurologists for Lyme disease and co-infections. They don't respect that. We don't have that for the rheumatologists. We don't have that for the dermatologists. These are the three main groups we see also in Germany, and psychiatric doctors. They belong to the neuropsychiatric parts. You know, the diagnosis could be also neuropsychiatric. You have autism, ADS, ADHD. Yeah, maybe you have Bartonellosis, but it's not in the guidelines. And then you go the normal traditional school medicine way, not this open-minded way or complementary way or Lyme-littered medical doctor way or whatever you could name it. You just go to the psychiatric doctor or neurologist who say, my child has autism, but nobody is associating that according to the guidelines, the education of the psychiatric experts. They will not check you for Lyme disease with the best tests. They don't know about persister forms. So we need to change, in the end, the guidelines. If we change the guidelines, we are 1,000 steps further. But then we have a problem. I don't want to say that, because we have a problem with traditional school medicine way. What is it? I studied pharmacy. It's a pharmaceutical, it's a chemical way. You know, we use a lot of drugs with side effects. You give drugs against your pain, but maybe it's Lyme disease. A drug against pain is a symptomatic therapy, we name it, but it's not solving Lyme disease. Maybe you need an antibiotic, or it's a virus, or it's something, a yeast and mold in the joint, whatever. You need to differentiate. You need to know. We need to educate. We need to change the guidelines. And we need to come back to the roots, and the roots is easy medicine and not this massively pharmaceutical way. I'm pretty convinced about that, because we see all of these Lyme patients with virus reactivations, and we cannot treat this all the time with virostatics. Name it ganciclovir. By the way, you know maybe that Coxsackie B1 is now 60-70%. We know that in juvenile diabetes, Coxsackie B1 is the reason for it. When you're going to kindergarten and you get juvenile diabetes, you have a herp angina or the hand foot mouth disease, and this is destroying your pancreatic cells, and then you have juvenile diabetes. And now there's huge paperwork now about that, spreading all over the world, also from in America. Now they say, yeah, we need to check these children for Coxsackie B1. Coxsackie B1, if you talk with me about a Lyme disease patient, I will talk with you about Coxsackie virus, which is doing not all of the symptoms, but same symptoms. So you have joint pain, arthritis, carditis, memory fog, concentration, you get multiple scores, you get Parkinson's, also dementia, as it is frontotemporal dementia. So we have a lot of paper. We need to evaluate the paperwork in the world for autoimmune disorders, Hashimoto's, and so, and all of this Sjögren, whatever. We need to respect the infections. And I'm sitting here for the 3I model. Diagnose and treat the infection. That's the first I. Diagnose and treat the immune suppression. Diagnose and treat the inflammation. And then you will see you have so good options for the patients, or you're too late, patient is damaged, and then you're too late. So we cannot rescue all of these patients by that 3 I's.
Wow, so much you just packed into that. Yes, guidelines definitely need to be changed. You know, kind of back to you can't get Lyme disease and then take 10 days of doxycycline and be all well. That's just not the way it is. And unfortunately, so many people out there do that route, and then they go down the rabbit hole for many years after that. But it's also, it really makes me, everything you just said really makes me wonder, like, okay, so I talk about Lyme, which in a sense, in terms, I'm generally speaking tick-borne vector illnesses, right? But then we're moving beyond ticks, right? Now we're into the mosquitoes. And this is scary, you know, for anybody that may be listening, because so many people have the misconception that ticks are only on the East Coast, or they're only, you know, in the summer, or they're only, that is just not true, right? And mosquitoes, I think, are everywhere, right? Ticks are everywhere too, but most people are probably more apt to believe that mosquitoes are more so out there than ticks are. So, but we don't want to scare everybody. It's all about awareness, right? Awareness and education. We can't all live in bubbles, but we need to know about our bodies, we need to know about our environments, and we need to protect them with everything that we can. And then going back to, you know, we're talking about the doctors. Yes, we never want to do any bashing on any of these doctors, but it's all in what we have in our toolbox, right? If they're going to medical school and learning to be a cardiologist or whatever it is, they're not learning about, you know, nutrition or gut health or, you know, all the things that go along with everything. And so it's all about them having to kind of, I guess, think outside the box, you know, get curious about more things that go on within our body. Because if you don't have the tools in your toolbox, you can't expect somebody to help you, right?
Yeah, there's not a scientific teaching book, you know, so about all of these infections.
There's not all of that 101 for dummies, right? That's what we need.
Yeah, and it's a full-time job, to be honest. Yes. I believe that not all of the doctors could do it beneath their main jobs, you know. But it's so important to know a little about that, and that it belongs into differentials. And this is still in the guidelines, you know. If we can manage, if we bring in multiple sclerosis, as an example, Epstein-Barr virus, EBV, is 60% the reason for multiple sclerosis. Maybe Lyme disease, 10 or 20%. In the end, they all have multiple infections, you know. I don't see one patient with just Lyme disease. So some don't have Lyme disease. They have completely different infections. But I see patients with 7-8 infections in the same body. So what? Where to start? Where to end? But we have concepts for that. You know, we have the bacteria, we can treat with antibiotics as an example. We have the parasites, we can treat with antiparasitals. We have the viruses, we can treat with antivirals. We have the yeast and mold part. We have also for the for Candida, we have the, some antifungi medicine. For the exposure, as you mentioned, if you travel around the world, you have very high exposure. We have Borrelia japonica. I had a patient from Japan getting very sick. She was from California traveling, and she was bitten by a tick and very, very sick. She got after that from a tick bite in Japan. So you don't know where you travel and also where you can be bitten. Also in South Africa, as an example, you have a lot of rickettsia. It's not Borrelia the main pathogen also in Australia. It's more rickettsiosis. We have some Lyme disease for sure in Australia. They name it Lyme-like illness, whatever they name it. But we have a lot of these infections and the climate change. I think we could discuss that. But still, it's getting warmer in the world sometimes. The winters are not so icy, so the ticks survive easier. And the people going more outside, they don't protect. At the East Coast, it's very high endemic. So many, many of these patients, also Kennedy, as you mentioned, I don't know where he lives exactly, but I'm sure at the East Coast, there's a very high risk and maybe he got bitten there or different tick bites. And most of the tick bites, they happen in your own garden, you know, or the domestics, the dogs bringing the ticks into your house and then you get in-house infection, we name it. So you got bitten also under the Christmas tree, you know, when you bring the Christmas tree inside and it's heating up, then ticks falling down and then you can get bitten from ticks in the houses. So we need education, we need prevention. If you go outside, look, the American Army has now protected clothes. They use some permethrin so to avoid mosquito bites because they know that there is a risk by this vector-borne diseases. And as you know, Napoleon's army was stopped before, I think, St. Petersburg. From infections, he just, you know, last bite. So where do we want to go now? So the enemy could be outside and just one tick bite could be enough, but no threat. You have the park rangers. Also, they inform you, don't lean on the trees, don't sit in the grass. But if you don't know that rules and if you're not informed, so this prevention and information of the population, of the people everywhere, it's a really urgent project to do now everywhere.
Yeah, it is for sure, because you know we can't live in a bubble. We just can't, right? We want to go out and we want to live our lives. And especially those that have recovered from this illness, you know, we kind of get a little bit of PTSD, right? We're afraid to go hiking. We're afraid to, you know, do all the things that we used to do, because once you battle this, I mean, you never want to go back, right? I know that firsthand. But you can't be scared. It's all about awareness, prevention. I know, you know, and so this is going to kind of lead into, you know, I got my friend Dr. Armin here. I'm going to utilize it for some personal stuff, if you don't mind, for real quickly. So when I travel outside the country, I always up my antimicrobials. I drink, you know, some cistus tea, one of Klinghart's favorite things. I do a lot of different things when I travel outside the country. One, prevention, kind of, I want to boost my immunity. There's just for so many reasons, right? Food differences and all of that stuff. So my question about me personally was, some doctors will only rely on blood tests, right? And I know a lot of my listeners have known that there's only been two labs that I trust, and it's Igenix in Palo Alto, California, and then, of course, Armin Labs, you, Dr. Armin, in Augsburg, Germany. And I wasn't aware of you when I got my Lyme tick testing in 2015. And so I went through Igenix, and it came back, you know, of course, not CDC positive, but I had all the bands, and I had Lyme, and I had Bartonella. And then many years later, I was treating and I got sick again from some emotional trauma. We talked, you know, I lost my home in a fire, and that trauma kind of re-triggered my Lyme. 17 years later after the bite, Babesia came out. Now, is that just because not all testing is perfect? Is it something, maybe I got reinfected by something else that brought out the Babesia? Because I thought, okay, if I'm having, you know, this little flare, I'm not totally healed yet. I know the modalities, I know the things I need to do, and I wasn't getting well. And I couldn't figure out why all of a sudden I had this air hunger and these night sweats, which were not normal for me. But then to find out that I had Babesia. So there's that question. And then along with the, should some doctors be doing clinical, you know, treating based on clinical symptoms?
Yeah, this is, there's not a 1000% guarantee if you do a test also in the leading laboratories you mentioned. That's all a question of your immune system. And this is also individual immune situation. You are maybe stressed, you have a lot of catecholamines, which is adrenaline, dopamine, noradrenaline. Or but we learned very interestingly, we diagnose a lot of long COVID post-vac patients with reactivated viruses, parasites. They all have fatigue, you know, all of these infections doing fatigue, mitochondropathy. This is not a specific thing just for virus infection. Also Lyme patients have fatigue. This, they suck our energy by the inflammation. But the main thing in your body, in my body, is the immune dysfunction maybe. And some of us, we acquire that because we are so stressed. Some of us, we have a genetic variation of that. And some of us, we have Lyme disease and get it in a secondary way, additionally beneath our stressing factor. So to me, every patient needs to check TH1 and TH2 disbalances. And we have a very easy and affordable and cheap panel for that. We test for CD3 cells, easy. We test for CD19 cells. This is the complete TH2 system. We check for the natural killer cells, CD56 and the subpopulation CD57. And by that, I can tell you where's your weakness of your immune system. And it's not just using antibiotics. It's also treating your immune system individually. Maybe you have a T cellular immune deficiency. We need to treat this. Maybe with some transfer factors, we need to stabilize that. Or you have low natural killer cells. We could treat you with colostrum as an example. So we have so many good products. We need to bring you back into normal immune situation, but also you need to work on your stressing factors. If you don't work on that, and again, Tanya, also your nutrition. If you have a very bad nutrition, you eat a lot of sugar, you drink alcohol, maybe you're using also too much coffee or whatever, or too much sugar or fast food, it's really difficult to come to a good success in your therapy. You work against your therapy. So there was a book from Kenneth B. Singleton that time, years ago. He did the basic nutritional therapy. Basic means vegetables, as an example. No sugar, no sweets, no fast food and all of this. No burgers, no meat, no pork, you know. So we poison ourselves. And you mentioned already the toxins, the aluminum, the mercury, the heavy metals in the food. We have the microplastics in the food. So it's starting with dirty water we drink, you know, purified water, water without gas. So we could do a lot by this. It's good for our gut, which remember back around 80% of our immunity. If you have a healthy nutrition, it's not solving your complete problem, but the inflammation is also going back, you know. So to me, a very good nutrition in the to be basic is really good for inflamed patients. And for your immune suppression, you need maybe vitamin C infusions or curcumin infusions, artisanate infusions, or you take some capsules, some pills. But the problem is, if you have an inflamed gut, you cannot resorb the pills, you know. The liposomal is not rescuing. You have the infection also in the gut. Coxsackie virus is in the gut. Cytomegalovirus is in the gut, you know. Also, these colitis patients have massive problems with it. If your gut is not healthy, you have intolerance, lactose intolerance, whatever. These pathogens are also living in the gut, you know, and you have additionally to Lyme disease, always a gut problem, I can tell you. And then you use long-term antibiotics. What's happening? You provoke the viruses and parasites in your gut. And what's happening then? You get more sick and you come into, I name it, a one-way street with a dead end. And then you say, I need more antibiotics. Okay, eat it like peanuts. This is not the way we are going. The to cure means to use the natural pathways.
Yeah, no, that was packed full of great information. And it's true, we can't expect, and of course I'm not going to be able to come up with this great, you know, classic analogy, but you can't expect to have a healthy body when you're feeding it all sorts of bad things, you know, no exercise, bad diet, lots of sugar, lots of alcohol, all that stuff. So that is such a huge part of this healing journey and just keeping our bodies strong and healthy. But I will tell you, since actually February, 4 years ago, I have been symptom free of everything. So I've had just an amazing life for the past 4 years after my 13-year journey, which is incredible. So it's just another person sharing with, you know, the listeners out there, it's possible, it can be done. I was once bedridden with a caregiver and I didn't know my name, right? And I lost all hope. And so don't lose hope, because we know that you can get well. So with that, Dr. Armin, is there, you know, because even just for me, for example, I was born with a bad gut. My mom said, I've never seen such a spit up baby in my life, right? She said, I can't even look at sour cream or cottage cheese ever, because that was all you spit up every day, all day long. I changed you a dozen times. And so obviously I had issues from the get go. Do you have any, and this might be a loaded question, right? So we know, as far as controlling the inflammation in our body, inflammation is the root cause of just everything, if not everything, right? And I know that there's, you know, inflammatory diets out there. Do you have any tips for us on how to reduce our inflammation? And this is not necessarily those that maybe even are battling a chronic illness right now, but maybe even just so somebody to try to prevent, you know, be preventative. Things that we can do to reduce the inflammation in our body and to protect or help our gut health.
Yeah, first, Tanya, sorry to say that I would check you for cytomegalovirus, which is very often transmitted in the birth channel to the baby, CMV. But I would also think about acquired infection, maybe Yersinia, Campylobacter, EBV, Epstein-Barr virus. Maybe something happened during your birth and you didn't know that some virus was coming to your body. Nobody was testing your mother or you. CMV is one of the most common and not so easy to treat viruses in the world, I would say. So it's intracellular, and viruses are difficult to treat, you know, so we use a lot of L-lysine, we use Takuna, Hotunia, we use immune support. So we have success also in non-Hodgkin lymphoma, BCLL lymphoma, with treating the EBV, Epstein-Barr, and cytomegalovirus. So these CMV, EBV, these are the main viruses in the world. Coxsackie virus, I don't know, maybe your mother has or had Coxsackie virus that time, and you get infection orally into your gut, and then it was done, you know. So, and you don't know about that, and you still live with it. So you cannot get 1000% healthy again. It's impossible. You're getting older, you get more immune suppressed. What could you do against, you mentioned the anti-inflammatory diet. So if you have an active infection in your body without knowing, because they are living in the Peyer patches, and by that they spread around in the macrophages and monocytes up to in your brain, making also cognitive and Alzheimer's and all of this, you know, when you're getting older or younger. So we have this, all of these are living in our gut, and the virome, you know, and the microbiome, we need to check that. Also Clostridium parasite, we need to know that. And if this is the case in your case, I would treat the underlying reason. Otherwise, you will not get healthy. You cannot get healthy. You still have this triggering factor. You still have the infection. You need to eliminate or bring it back. I name it into sleep mode, not being active in your body. You bring it back under immune control, you know, by different therapy options. What could you do? Also, in your, you need to avoid something. I have myself a histamine intolerance, you know, and if I eat garlic and fish and tomatoes, so I would say this is worst case scenario for me, and my gut is not doing pretty well. I have lactose intolerance I didn't know that 10 years ago, but I have that secondarily acquired by a Coxsackie virus infection myself. I treated that infection now much better, but still I'm damaged in my gut. product with my lactose intolerance. So I have histamine intolerance. What is histamine intolerance? It means the overproduction of the antibodies, IgG, IgA, too much expressed. And then you have the Th2 switch we could measure in laboratory. And maybe you are vaccinated or you had SARS-CoV-2 or both. The spike protein is circulating in your body, and it also can persist in your gut, in the endothelial cells. So it's not the maybe not the living SARS-CoV-2 virus, but it's part of it. And all of these bacteria you need to, or the rest of them, these are proteins, they are circulating in your macrophages, in the gut, everywhere in the tissue, and they make us also sick and inflammation in our bodies. So it might be that Borrelia is really dead in your body, but you have still ongoing circulating proteins, which means the bands or whatever you name it, the rest of these. So what you also need, the liver, we need a good elimination in the lymphatic system, you know, that plays a massive role in our spleen, in our liver. And one of the, yeah, the magic words is detox, you know, how to detox. I name you my favorites, yes. Berber and Stephen Puner and Cowden, Burr, Pinella. This is a wonderful combination for detox. We have very, it's some liquids, some drops. If you use them, you could try that out. You could get Herxheimer, whatever. But we need detox. You could also do some liver detox, more other remedies, zeolite, or that was Shoemaker's idea with BB-Tox 1 and BB-Tox 2 that time. So you could use a lot of detox remedies, but in the end, you always need to treat these three eyes. You need to treat the underlying infection, where it is, what it is. You need to treat the immune suppression, and you need and treat the inflammation. And what we need, biofilm breakers. Every patient, we need a biofilm breaker. Biofilm is a slime. If you have a cold, you spit out a chlamydia pneumonia slime. This is a biofilm, you know. So, this you need to drink minimum 3 or 4 liters water without gas every day. Otherwise, the biofilm is not dissolved, you know. And you need a biofilm breaker as it is with the natokinase, the dendelin in combination, or you use the serapeptase or the lumpokinase. So, we have different biofilm breakers. When I was a young internal medicine cardiologist, we used that when you had a heart attack. We used the lumpokine as a biofilm breaker to bring back the little arteria in the heart, which was blocked, the biofilm away. You know, this is biofilm. And we know that chlamydia pneumonia is doing atherosclerosis. Herpes simplex virus is doing atherosclerosis. Varicella zoster virus, we have huge studies. They live in the endothelial cells, in the gut, in your vessels. And then you have this microangiopathies, and you have a bad blood perfusion. We need ozone, we need oxygen, we need oxygenation. And in the end, you need also to treat your gut. Very good for you. If you have problems, do colon hydrotherapy.
I do one of my favorite things.
Absolutely. And then, Tanya, you do ozone rectal ozone, or vaginal ozone in your case.
Love
this
ozone.
This is the booster, boom. And then you resorb a lot of this ozone. What is ozone? Oxygen. This is your life. This is the erythrocytes, the hemoglobin. You need it for your perfusion, you know, because Babesia likes your erythrocytes. So the question is, can we kill all or destroy all Babesia? Can we destroy it really? Can we destroy malaria? No, we cannot destroy. We live with Plasmodium falciparum, it's named, or maybe our whole life. We need a strong immune system. We need anti-inflammatory diet or anti-inflammatory therapies. We need to do good cytokine therapy against the cytokine storm in our bodies, which means the pain. Interferon gamma, which is our ELISpot spot test. It's based on interferon gamma, Th1 active infections. And by the way, if you do antibodies, the only antibody which is reflecting infections, mucosal infections, they're all in the mucosa, also Borrelia, is the IgA, the immune globulin A test. We don't have it for Lyme disease. This would mean a break. The IgG, could tell you a past infection. It cannot tell you active infection. You could do the IgA, it's not available for Borrelia, or you do the ELISpot, the interferon gamma releases, and then you know, is it active or not?
Wow. Okay. This was a total win-win. The listeners get to take away all these great tips that you're offering and all of these extra things that you're throwing out there for us. And it was almost like having my own personal one-on-one visit with Dr. Armin. I appreciate that so much. Yes, ozone, colonics, those are my favorite things. And also, you know, like I mentioned, I've been well for 4 years. I live a, you know, I'm active. I try to eat really well, right? Everything in moderation. I, you know, of course we all do bad things. But I always have felt that I just have to do, you know, work on my lymphatics, do detoxing, you know, do all these things on a regular or semi-regular basis to stay healthy, right? To stay Lyme-free, to stay symptom-free, when really maybe the problem is an underlying issue that I was not even aware of, like the cytomegalovirus that you talked about or the Coxsackie. So thank you for that. I will be reaching out. I want to get tested for those. Again, I feel amazing, but I just feel like I work so much harder than the average person to try to just stay healthy, which I have no problem doing, right? We all want to work on our bodies. We want to have all of our detox pathways open. We want to work on all the stuff. But I see other people and I'm like, why are they just always healthy, right? Like they don't do all the greatest things. They're just always healthy. Well, I think it's because I was born with just something, our genes, right? Our DNA, I don't know. So that was fabulous information. I never would have thought any of that. So thank you so much for sharing that with me.
Thank you. Just some ideas. It's not the solution for the whole world. It's not.
It's a starting point, and it's a great starting point. Yes, exactly. For sure. Exactly. For sure. Because I never would have dreamed. You know, there's no Lyme or any co-infections detected in my body. I treat parasites a couple times a year. I follow it up with my colonics a couple times a year. I do ozone with my colonics. Like I do all the stuff and I feel amazing. I have no complaints to finally have my life back. But it's just a constant wanting to try to stay healthier and then also learning, right? Learning and then sharing with the listeners because maybe somebody is dealing with exactly what I am. So I love it. Thanks so much for sharing all of that. Great information.
Thank you, Tanya. There are many of your listeners suffering from that without knowing or getting now an idea what to do, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, it's all over the board. So and there was one question that I like to ask different practitioners because I think we all have our own version of ideas, right? Whatever they've studied science, whatever they know. I think you've kind of already answered it for me earlier when we were talking about it without knowing. Is a lot of people often ask, does all of these Lyme infections, all of these pathogens, do they just go into remission or are we actually able to cure ourselves from all these things? Or there's always something underlying that is stopping us or prohibiting from that happening?
Yeah, many of them are intracellular, or all of them are intracellular, and they do persist the forms, you know. So we cannot check the cells. The only test we have now for Lyme disease is the TickPlex for this intracellular persister forms. So I myself had tick bite with 6 years. I have intracellular persister forms without being symptomatic, you know. So, but I could do a retest and then I see, oh, now it's IgM, it's reactivated or so, and do this, but and then I would treat. I would not treat a symptom-free patient with just persister forms. So the question of remission is good. It's a, I think, more hypothetical question because we cannot look into our cells. It's impossible. We could do a dark field microscopy. Maybe you get an impression intracellular, but in the end, you really need to have a very good immune system. Also, when you're getting older, when you're younger, and you need a good lifestyle and a good genetics, as you mentioned.
Yeah, genetics, I think it plays a lot in it for sure. And we don't know, right? We don't know what we don't know.
You cannot change your face, Tanya. You're looking like Tanya and you have your own genetics.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So much stuff. I think that we could just go on and on. A million things we can touch on. Anything that you think maybe is kind of something that is not talked about a lot, or maybe that the listeners can really even benefit more? Just kind of one last thing that maybe we can touch on before we end this fabulous hour.
Yes, I have a new mission because can you tell you my own story, but I have the mission now, and I know that a lot of infections are doing cancer. Okay, so we have this turbo cancer now in America, also in Germany with young people, pancreas cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, Hodgkin lymphoma. So my mission, or what I'm doing actually, a lot of evidence-based paperwork and presentations and panels, which type of infection we know already in which type of cancer. Because if we can maybe defeat or bring back the viruses into a sleep mode, EBV, Epstein-Barr virus, is highly associated with a lymphoma, with leukemia. Also Coxiella boniti, interestingly, and anaplasma, and some tick-borne illnesses also can do leukemia. There are papers about that. The oncologists don't know, or they don't want to know. We have a chance also in cancer patients, and this is my new project, our new challenge in cancer patients, to find out which infection could be associated, let me name it, prostate cancer, chlamydia trachomatis, or herpes simplex virus. Let us test for it, let us treat, and maybe we have a chance to stop the cancer, bring it back, make it reversible. It doesn't work in all of these cases, but in the end, I think cancer and infections and autoimmune disorders and chronic fatigue and different infections, long COVID, these are the challenges for the future.
Wow, that's so interesting that you brought that up, and that is fascinating. So you have this new mission, Dr. Armin. You can't even think about retiring anytime soon. I know that when we started the show, you said you're on the end. No, we're going to have to force to keep you around a little bit. But I have said and often wondered if there was any type of correlation between, you know, Lyme or co-infections and cancer, because I see it so many times out there. And me, in fact, I reach remission and then I get breast cancer. So I see it a lot. And that is really fascinating that you're detecting and doing these studies to figure out the correlations between the
Tanya,
two.
Because you mentioned breast cancer. There are studies about Bartonella. They removed the breast from so-called breast cancer patients, and then they found it had to do with the cat scratches or tick bite, and they treated with rifampin, which is antibiotic against, it was British paper, and the breast cancer was gone away. So breast cancer was cured in this patient. You understand?
Wow.
So you have options. You have options.
Wow, chances. That is incredible. That is incredible. Yes, and I'm cancer-free, I'm Lyme-free, I'm all this stuff, but still working hard to get rid of, you know, that underlying issue that probably is floating around somewhere in my gut or something that I wouldn't have known anything about without being able to pick your brain a little bit on my show. I love it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tanya.
Yeah,
we come back for a second show.
You know, I'm going to. I think we just need to get it on the calendar. Maybe that'll be a sure way to make sure that you don't disappear and go and retire on us, right? We need you. We appreciate what you're doing. And it's just always a pleasure to pick your brain, have you share all the information. And thanks for throwing in that extra tidbit about the cancer correlations with what's going on out there. I love hearing and knowing that there's so many more continued studies going on out there to help us, right? Like, we only have one life. We want to live the best life that we can. And we've got to know this information from doctors like you. So forever grateful, Dr. Armin. Always, always a pleasure and an honor to chat with you.
Thank you very, very much. And stay healthy. And Tanya, you said one sentence, I think we'll never give up.
Nope. We'll never give up. I love it. I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the About of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.